First of all, I'm going to take you back to 2017. We're going to make sense of the dollars and cents, but I think we need a bit of a run-up before we get to 2018's Black Panther.
It's a good idea.
Good idea. We need context. We need run-up. We need a lovely cup of tea. Right, first of all, 2017. We had Guardians of the Galaxy, Volume 2. Budget, $200 million. Box office, $863.8 million. Wow.
It's a step up from the first one, wasn't it?
Absolute step up. Doesn't stop there. We have Spider-Man Homecoming. Budget, slightly less, $175 million. Box office, slightly more, $880.2 million. What a savings.
That makes a lot of sense, though, because Spider-Man is a huge character. That's a debut, as it were, in the MCU. Mm. But Spider-Man is a massive character. Making the 800 kind of mark makes sense for a character. If, you know, it's Guardians didn't do that on its debut. They were all sort of unknown characters.
No. And then next up, of course, we have Thor Ragnarok. Budget, $180 million. Box office, very similar figures here, people, $854 million.
And great, of course, that stuff makes sense. One of the three big characters from the start of the MCU, whose profile kind of exploded with the Avengers movies, and even after one ropey movie, a real big return for Thor there.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I know it's not your particular favourite one, but it's you can't help but admit it was very popular.
We looked into it. Hulk, yep. Putting Hulk in that movie as well, and all over the trailers and the advertising is a big boost. You're getting kind of a mini Avengers movie.
Exactly. If you want to hear more details, obviously, please go back and listen to our episodes after you've listened to this one, young man.
Eat your greens before dessert is what we're saying.
That's what I'm saying. But before I get onto Black Panther, just a quick side note. I had a quick look for 2018 superhero movies, and DC released Aquaman in 2018 with all the housewives' favourite, Jason Momoa. Something for the mums. I call him Something for the Mums.
Something for the Mumzoa. Why not?
It sounds like a snack. To be fair, Jason Momoa, he is a bit of a snack. Budget for DC's Aquaman in 2018, $160 to $200 million. Box office, and I can't believe this, Rob, $1.149 billion. How did that happen? I didn't see it.
For Aquaman. The guy that talks to fish. I would not have expected to that at all.
Yeah. I would expect around like 500, 600, but hey, something for the mums. Mums got money, you know.
It suggests people went back to see it multiple times, I think, or maybe it was maybe it's China. It's very hard to tell these days with these secondary markets, tertiary markets.
Yeah, I'm not going to get into talking about DC films. We're talking about the Marvel Cinematic Universe here.
But that's a debut movie.
But it
is a character that's had some exposure. I mean, very small. You got to go back to the Super Friends, really.
Some exposure. He does walk around with his top off a lot. I know what you're saying. Anyway, we come to our main boy, our main guy, our fella, Black Panther 2018. Budget, $200 million. Box office. Here we go. $1.382 billion.
An insane amount of money.
Insane. Actually, how much did Iron Man 3 make?
For a character that is not in the Avengers, for a character that is barely, you know, it turned up in a Captain America movie.
Yeah.
That's not been there since phase one, that didn't have this like Hulk and Spider-Man, this backstory of TV shows in the 70s or the 80s or cartoons in the 80s and 90s, like just dropping this guy, suddenly this character appears, and everything about this movie connected with a massive audience.
Massive audience. I have to say, when I was on the stand-up circuit back then, I remember so many black friends. And everyone I knew of, you know, who's black, was so excited, unbelievably excited. It was so positive to see. You remember when they announced Jodie Whittaker as Doctor Who?
Yeah.
Yeah, and there was this video that went online where they made the announcement, and this little girl saw it, and she absolutely lost her mind. It's because finally, you know, there's someone who's like me.
Representation.
Yeah. And it's just...
There are some very touching photos of black kids staring up at the giant cardboard cutout of the all the amazing black heroes in Black Panther. And
yeah.
It really means something to people. Though, what have you got for us in the behind-the-scenes section then, Will? What dirt can you dig up about this Black Panther movie?
This is the biggest pile of dirt I've ever dug up, and boy, the nuggets on it can kill you. You could kill a man with these nuggets, Rob. Anyway, we'll start in the early 90s. In June 1992, Wesley Snipes announced his intention to make a film about Black Panther, and began work on it by that August. Speaking to the Hollywood Reporter in 2018, Snipes said, "I think Black Panther spoke to me because he was noble, and he was the antithesis of the stereotypes presented and portrayed about Africans, African history, and the great kingdoms of Africa. It had cultural significance, social significance. It was something that the black community and the white community hadn't seen before. Many people don't know that there were fantastic, glorious periods of African empires and African royalty. Mansa Musa, Emperor of the West African Mali Empire, and some of the wealthiest men in the world compared to the wealth of today. That was always very, very attractive, and I loved the idea of the advanced technology. I thought that was very forward-thinking. Black Panther is an iconic character who much of the world was unfamiliar with, and the communities that I grew up in would love. Look, from the days of William Marshall playing Blackula in the 1970s black flicks and the fervor you found inside the black and Hispanic communities, it never crossed my mind that the audience wouldn't be down with it."
We love Wesley Snipes.
Oh, he's a good
and
boy.
He is a confirmed like comic book dude. He really does read and get into those characters. It would have been interesting with Wesley Snipes, but as we'll discover later on, it would not have been as cool as the depiction we get of Black Panther in this movie, because that depiction of Black Panther hadn't happened yet in 1992.
Okay. I'm looking forward to this. Next up, what happened next? So, former Marvel editor-in-chief Tom DeFalco recalls taking a trip with Marvel brass to Los Angeles in the 90s for a flurry of meetings, during which they had a dinner with Columbia execs and screenwriter Terry Hayes. The screenwriter gave this incredible pitch from the beginning to end for Black Panther, which began with a battle in Wakanda and Baby T'Challa being put on a river in a basket to be saved. Years later, T'Challa is a grown man living somewhere else, going about his life. Suddenly, he's attacked in an elevator in an elaborately choreographed fight scene, and the story goes from there. So it sounds like they're doing that typical someone born to greatness, going
but
humble backgrounds.
It.
Yeah, we've seen it in Star Wars and Harry Potter.
It is, in general, if you think about the arc of story, the journey of the hero, they generally have to start off somewhere in their regular everyday life, and then throughout the acts, they have to suddenly enter a brand new, incredible world, which opens their eyes and their... And that's hard to do when you're doing a character that starts in a brand new, incredible world that the audience hasn't seen. You can't quite do the stereotypical hero's journey that way, so it's a lot easier to do the, you know, the Harry Potter, Luke Skywalker, you know, trope.
It's a comfortable trope, Rob. It's a very comfortable trope.
It works for a reason.
DeFalco said, "I just remember as the writer was describing the scene, I could see it in my mind. I thought, if this is our Black Panther movie, sign me up." He really had a terrific handle on the character, on the action, on the stakes, and everything else. So all sounding really positive. The next July, Snipes planned to begin The Black Panther after starring in Demolition Man.
Best movie ever.
It's one of those films that has... It's way better than it has any right to be. Very entertaining, although I do consider it to be a soft adaptation of Aldous Huxley's Brave New World. But that's another...
No, it isn't.
There are so many elements in that film where it feels like Brave New World.
It's just cryogenic freezing and the things are weird in the future. Come on, man.
Yeah, but I have my argument points, but I will not be making them. But I genuinely think there is so much borrowed from that book, from that film. But anyway, we're not here to talk about Demolition Man.
Anderson sci-fi apocalypse movie, Barbed Wire, is a remake of Casablanca.
I've read that somewhere. Oh, God,
You know, they have a fight on a crane at the end, which would have made Casablanca a lot better. If Humphrey Bogart had a massive set of jugs
and he
fought a bad guy in a big crane at the end, that Casablanca would finally be a classic film.
I have to say, I watched that. Was it Pam and Tommy on Disney Plus series? Mm. And one episode, she's doing the PR and stuff for the upcoming Barbed Wire film, and it's like watching a car crash before it happens because you know how bad that film did. And I'm like, no, I'm on her side in this. I feel really bad for her, and she doesn't know it's happening yet. Anyway, let's get our heads back in the game. So anyway. A month later, Snipes expressed interest in making sequels to the film as well, Black Panther. In January 1994, Snipes entered talks with Columbia Pictures to portray Black Panther, and Black Panther co-creator Stan Lee joined the film by March. It entered early development by May. Snipes had discussion with several different screenwriters and directors about the project, including Mario Van Peebles and John Singleton. When the film had not progressed by January 1996, Lee explained that he had not been pleased with the scripts for the project. Snipes said that one of the issues with the project's development was confusion among those unfamiliar with the comics who thought the film was about the Black Panther Party. They think you want to come out with the black beret and clothing, and there's a movie, Snipes recalls. I can totally see that. Yes,
yeah. As we all learn later on, it trips up the comic books as well. In the 1970s.
I was about to say who came. Well, actually, no. You could probably tell me who came first, the Black Panther Party.
Yeah. Good. That's right. I am.
Rob's got me. I have a question. I don't need to ask it. He's already got the answer. He's like Alexa. looking back on the project stalling and failing, Snipes said ultimately. We couldn't find the right combination of script and director. And also at the time, we were so far ahead of the game in the thinking, the technology wasn't there to do what they had already created in the comic book.
It would be incredibly difficult to recreate an entire highly advanced sci-fi alien kind of alien world.
Mm.
When you think about when you think about Star Wars, it's a magic trick. Yep. It's an illusion.
Mm.
The worlds you see are a place full of ice, a place full of sand, and a Death Star that's just corridors and meeting rooms.
Yep.
Like it's just an illusion, as all great kind of movie making should be. But to take what is on the page for the world of Wakanda and to try and create something that feels like it is a highly advanced world without that that being said, they managed it with the Judge Dredd movie.
Judge Dredd, yeah, the 1995
they really Judge managed Dredd. It with the Judge Dredd movie. So maybe the tech was there if you had the budget.
I read this the other day because I read the book The Planet of the Apes, and it's actually quite different to the 1968 film because they actually have a full city with cars, with apes and stuff, but it would have been so hard to actually create that in film at the time. So, that was technology holding it behind. They could not
That's just simply not as good.
No, I totally agree.
Especially for the reveal at the end. Creating a world that feels like our world, but with monkeys wearing suits and driving cars, is one. It's kind of funny and laughable.
Mm.
It's not like, oh God, where am I?
Yeah.
And the reveal wouldn't be as heartbreaking and horrifying.
Exactly. What an ending to a film. But anyway, watch Planet of the Apes when you can. In July 1997. Sorry, just making sure where I am. I am good. So much stuff to get through, Robert. So much stuff to get through. I trip over myself.
The good Lord invented cursors and highlighting texts for a reason. You can just move your cursor, highlight where you are, and that saves your place. Look, there you go.
But if you do that, sometimes I could nudge something and move the text somewhere where I don't want it to. There's loads of advanced stuff that I don't like. In July 1997, Black Panther was listed as part of Marvel Comics' film slate, and in March 1998, Marvel reportedly hired Joe Quesada and Jimmy Palmiotti, who, at the time, were editors of the Black Panther comics, to work on it. Quesada and Palmiotti have both denied this.
Why is it here then?
I don't know. I like
I
like putting in stuff that's like, oh, reportedly
rumors
this happened.
True.
And then they said, no, didn't happen. I like rumors that aren't true. It just shows you how much buzz was going around that people started lying.
At the time, Joe Quesada and Jimmy Palmiotti were head of the Marvel Knights project, which was searching out bold new writers and artists that perhaps hadn't really worked in Marvel before and introduced them to some great characters. That is the project that gives us the Black Panther series that heavily influenced the movie.
Good.
And Joe Quesada would go on within 5 years to be the editor-in-chief of all of Marvel Comics. Could have been an interesting project if he got involved in Black Panther movie in 98.
Oh God! It just no. I'm not going to think about it because we got a lovely Black Panther movie right here. In May 2000, Marvel Studios negotiated a deal with Artisan Entertainment.
Artisan deal. Yeah, come up before for us in Man Thing and Punisher. God, and a bunch of other movies. Movies we looked at.
Yep. For a co-production joint venture that included rights to 15 Marvel characters, including Captain America, Thor, the Black Panther, Iron Fist, and Deadpool. Artisan would finance and distribute, while Marvel would develop licensing and merchandising tie-ins. The resulting production library, which should also include TV series, direct-to-video films, and internet projects, would be co-owned. Reporting on the story, Variety magazine described the proposed Black Panther film as a black Indiana Jones-style character, to which Wesley Snipes has been long attached to the producing star. Black Indiana Jones-style character, what are they on about?
I guess they're removing the very, very expensive elements that are like Wakanda, and they're kind of going with a jungle idea. I can kind of see it playing. Black Panther's got a lot of similarities to the old comic strip character, the Phantom.
The guy in the purple suit.
Is another white man living in a jungle, surrounded by. Basically, in the old days, if you wanted to do a story set in Africa, you had to first invent a white man who would come in and do all the cool stuff, like Tarzan or the Phantom. Yeah. So, yeah, I can kind of maybe see where they were going with that.
Yeah, I can see that too. Now you said that. In September 2005, Marvel chairman and CEO Avi Arad announced Black Panther.
Every episode we do. Good old Avi.
Do you know
he's
what?
Got his fingers in everything. Hasn't he?
It's like when you're trying to connect things and you've managed to sort out all this data. You just put the search term Avi Arad, and it's like, oh God, he's at the hub of all this.
So he's the Kevin Bacon of Marvel.
Oh God, no! Have we said this before? No.
No, we played Kevin Bacon on our Guardians of the Galaxy holiday special with Kevin Bacon.
Which you guys must listen to. It's a wonderful, rip-roaring time. We did have a lovely game playing that. So Avi Arad announced Black Panther as one of the 10 films being developed by the new Marvel Studios. Very exciting times. In 2007, Fantastic Four director Tim Story expressed his interest in casting... I should have looked up this name. I think it's Jimon Hounsou.
I think that's it, yeah.
Yeah, I did all right for a white guy. As Black Panther, if he were to direct another Fantastic Four film after Fantastic Four, Rise of the Silver Surfer. But a third Fantastic Four film helmed by Story went unproduced. Talking to the LA Times, Story said, I've got to tell you, to get the Fantastic Four and turn it to a franchise, the first thing I thought was, will I get the Silver Surfer or someone like the superhero Black Panther who was introduced in their book? Get Jimon Hounsou and go do it. But there are so many other great villains and stories, I feel like I hit the jackpot. So we could have gotten back then, but I don't know.
We could have got a Black Panther. Could have been Fantastic Four 3, The Rise of the Black Panther or something.
Fantastic Four. What an awkward title that is. I'm glad they did that. Fantastic Four 3. What, so Fantastic 43?
Well, they didn't do it in Fantastic Four 2, did they? They didn't do Fantastic Four 2. Fantastic 42.
Fantastic. I'm confused. In March 2009, Marvel hired writers to help come up with creative ways to launch its lesser-known properties, including Black Panther. Nate Moore, the head of the writers' program, was overseeing the development of Black Panther specifically. Stipe's involvement stalled at this time as he was convicted for failing to file a tax return, serving his sentence from June 2010 to April 2013.
I don't know if people know this, but like Wesley Snipes, yeah, one of the biggest action stars in the world, and then he went to prison for like 3 years.
Yeah.
Amazing. Pay them taxes, kids. Yeah, file them self-assessments.
Yeah, do that. I need to might do that at some point. Oh, God, I hate money. In Captain America, the First Avenger, vibranium was introduced into the MCU, which comes from Black Panther's home nation, Wakanda. Marvel had considered showing Wakanda itself as early as Iron Man 2 in 2010, but were waiting until they had a full idea of how to depict it. Black Panther screenwriter Joe Robert Cole knew that Black Panther would be a big deal, saying, "Black Panther is a historic opportunity to be a part of something important and special, particularly at a time when African Americans are affirming their identities while dealing with vilification and dehumanization. The image of a black hero on this scale is just really exciting. When I was a kid, I would change superheroes' names. Instead of James Bond, I was James Black. Instead of Batman, I was Black Man. And I have a 3-year-old son. My son will be 5 when Black Panther comes out. That puts it all into perspective for me."
That's an incredible quote, isn't it, really?
That makes you think, doesn't it? It's just changing the present so the future can be better than your past.
And wonderful, I do also remember when the Luke Cage series came out in the middle of another spate of black people being shot by police, I remember it being very zeitgeisty and getting lots of press attention and lots of ink because the idea of inventing a black superhero that was bulletproof and putting it out in that time seemed so zeitgeisty and finger on the pulse and kind of prescient, despite the fact it had been prescient since the character was invented.
I was just about to say it's been zeitgeisty for a fair few decades now, unfortunately.
It feels like almost whenever the Black Panther movie would come out, it would have that big feeling to it, and it would feel like it is ripe for the moment.
Oh, God, it's... The energy for that film, for this film, man. Oh, God.
As a world, we were just thirsty for this movie, which is why it smashed that billion mark, didn't it? And became a huge, huge blockbuster.
Thirsty boy.
People just wanted this film. They just wanted something like this.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Director Ryan Coogler was inspired by the southern African country Lesotho as inspiration for Wakanda, which was able to resist both the Zulus and the Boers and was only lightly colonised by the British.
Just a bit of light colonisation. That's all we're up to today, lads.
What's wrong, Dad? I may have committed some light colonisation.
Light colonisation.
Some light treason. I love that line so much in Arrested Development. Production designer Hannah Beechler wanted to honour the comic designs but fill in the gaps with research concentrated on sub-Saharan Africa, pulling inspiration from Uganda, Rwanda, Burundi, Congo, Kinshasa, Ethiopia, as well as the designs of Zaha Hadid. Beechler said, "We took a lot of architecturally from a lot of different regions in Africa. We were at Blythe Canyon in South Africa where the mountains looked like rendezvous, and Ryan was like, we should put rendezvous tops on our skyscrapers. We should add more of that into the technology. I started digging into things that were part of a lot of different tribes, traditions, then figuring out a way to really make them technologically advanced as if it would be very natural. Because we're also looking at Wakanda as never having been colonized."
That's a massive thing from the comics, that Wakanda has never, ever been invaded or colonized.
That's it's an interesting thing, though, because you get this vastly different appearance to an African nation without any Western influence, or sorry, European influence, if you will.
And I'm sure there are some when she says she wants to honour the comic designs, I'm sure there's some they wanted to try and honour, but it was never the original wild Jack Kirby drawings that is... They'd look like... You remember when we looked at Galactus's ship when we looked in our Fantastic Four Rise of the Sun Surfer, and it's this dazzling display of like tubing and zapping electricity and multicolored metals, and that's what all of Wakanda looks like in the original in the original comic designs. It's like no one could live there. it's like the inside of a giant computer. It'd be very peculiar.
Oh, fantastic. Costume designer Ruthie Carter referenced the Maasai, Himba, Dogon, Basotho, Tuareg, Turkana, Hisosa, I'm not very good with X's in African names.
I imagine it's a Z, but I'm not 100% on that. That might be Greek.
It could be Xhosa. I'm going to say Xhosa if I'm wrong. Apologies. Zulu, Suri, and Dinka people in her designs. The Dora Milaje costumes primarily use red to reflect different African cultures and included beaded tabards that feature talismans that would be passed down from mother to daughter. Carter wanted to avoid the girls in bathing suits look and instead have the Dora Milaje wear full armour that they would practically need for battle. She also had to take actors' stunt work into consideration.
They're a really unique part of this movie, the Dora Milaje. They really are.
They're an absolute highlight for me.
The movements, the way they look, their appearance, the presentation of them.
There's a grace to them. I'm not going to simp over the Dora Milaje. We'll simp over them later when we talk about them in the film. But I bloody love them and love it when they pop up in any other film. Talking about the Dora Milaje, Carter said, "I feel like I was influenced more by the Dora Milaje because we were working backwards. The Dora Milaje were designed and developed first, and since we had to go back in time to the 1980s and come up with an early version of the Dora Milaje, we tried to do something that felt a little more retro. Grace Jones is still very iconic in the 1980s. I don't think there was any other black woman who shaved her head that was more iconic than Grace and more powerful looking than her. For the line, it worked. But I didn't need to use more than the Dora Milaje and all their influence, beauty, strength, and femininity. We wanted to honour the woman. We wanted to show how three-dimensional she is. For example, Nakia is a war dog. She's a spy. She's a princess. She's a warrior. She's a Bond girl. Most women have all of these roles wrapped up in one. It was important for us to show that strength and femininity, but not exploit it. The Dora Milaje honours the female form by having the harness that wraps around their female body in a very sensuous way. It doesn't exploit it by showing too much skin. It is actually a really functional uniform that is also believable. It has a lot of honour and tradition, so you could actually tell a story with it. I felt really good about creating a costume for women that even young girls could feel comfortable wearing when the costumes came out after the movie was released. Not every young lady wants to be in a bathing suit top and a cheerleading skirt when they want to play their favourite superhero. Everyone can feel comfortable in a Dora costume, and I feel empowered by it. It was important for us to take this costume seriously, but also give it a history, as well as honour the female form. It's not a feminist costume or masculine. It's very sensual, but it's also very realistic and beautiful at the same time.
I did just want to point out that the...
Hello.
The Dora Milaje in the comics do not wear cheerleading skirts and bathing suit tops. They wear battle armor and they're badasses the whole time.
And as
you said you think she's talking about other superhero movies.
I remember we talked about this behind the scenes when I was talking about this note, and I just think she's talking about the other women in superhero films, but they do wear more
like
revealing.
Which one?
I don't know. Supergirl.
There hadn't been a Supergirl. I mean, maybe, but there hadn't been a Supergirl movie since like the early 70s. So I don't know. I just want to, in case people hear that and think the interpretation is, oh my god, their presentation in the comic books must be really sexist. No, the Dora Milaje is just a badass in the comics.
As you're about to find out later in my notes, she won an Oscar for that. So shut up.
No. I didn't say that Ruthie, whatever her name is, shouldn't have won an Oscar for it. I said it could be construed from the way you've written it and the way she's spoken that she's criticising the comic book art design of these characters, which I don't think should be criticised.
Okay, agreed. A unique culture was created for each of the Wakandan tribes to get a sense of the country being a mix of different tribes. You had the Golden Tribe, the royal family, uses a motif of black and continental symbol for the sun found throughout Africa. They also have panther-themed designs. The Border Tribe was inspired by Lesotho architecture and language. The tribe symbol is Lesotho word for horsemen. Their motif is blue, a national Lesotho colour, and wood. They use rhino-themed weapons, attack rhino shields and horn-shaped blades. They frequently wear Basotho blankets. The Basotho are the majority in Lesotho. The River Tribe was inspired by the Surma and Mersey of Ethiopia, Nilotic peoples who hail from the River Nile. Their motif is green and shells. They wear crocodile skins and leather. I noticed them immediately, like the kind of crocodile-y suit he was wearing. Suit there. Oh, there's so much to love about the costumes in this film. I knew I had to get deep into it.
100%.
The Mining Tribe was inspired by the Himba and Maasai of Southern Africa. The motif is red and orange. They wear lion-themed designs. The Merchant Tribe was inspired by the Tuareg of the Sahara. Their motif is purple. And last but not least, the Jabari Tribe was inspired by the Bari, Igbo, and the Dogon of Western Africans, shamanistic, naturalistic tribes. They wear fur and wood to honour their sacred animal, the gorilla.
It really, really stands out that especially in the big ceremony scenes, that there's all these vastly different kind of shades to all these characters. Even if they're background characters, you get the sense of these different communities. You get the sense of these different, like, you get a heightened sense of politics when you realize, oh, well, that's like a different house. That's a different house. That's a different house. And really, it's quite different from how Wakandans are portrayed in the comic books up until the point of 2018. Mm. So it's a really considered, thoughtful, and really cool kind of addition or update that the movie brings to Wakanda. It's really awesome.
It's a lot of world building that isn't explored, but is there as a fantastic backdrop, and I love it. Coogler brought in consultants who are experts on African history and politics to work on defining Wakanda. Coogler said, "There are many African countries, each with different histories, mythologies, and cultures. There are several tribes who live amongst each other, and together they make the identity of their country. We owned in some of the historical cultural influences from African countries and then made estimations." During an interview with Michael Martin on the radio program, All Things Considered, I'm very bad at pronouncing her name. Okoye-Zaak actor.
Okay, just give it a go.
Denai Gurira said that the language spoken by Wakandans is a real language, Xhosa, a South African language characterized by clicks and glottal stops. It's the same language that is native to Nelson Mandela. It's from the Cape region of South Africa. And Mr. John Canny, who plays T'Challa's father, T'Chaka, he's Xhosa. And so they started and agreed to that language before being the language of Wakanda in Captain America Civil War in 2016. So, yeah.
There will be several names that myself and Will might not be able to pronounce first time. But it doesn't, you know, and there might be people out there that especially when you're broadcasting it, you might see for yourself getting a little bit nervous that you might. But messing up somebody's name, a name you haven't read before or said aloud before, it's not an insult, and nobody really takes it as too much of an insult. So I wouldn't, you know, we'd have to worry about it, buddy. No one's going to hear this and go, "Oh, he sounds ignorant to me." Well, ignorant, but it's fine.
Well, it's not just that. I really love Denaya Guerrero in this as Okoye. I thought she was fantastic. Yeah, and yet 100%. I can't pronounce her name, so I can't simp her properly.
Well, if me and you had grown up with dozens and dozens of Denaya Guerreras in our schools and workplaces, and it would be as common to us as you know, Tom and Jeff and Rob. But just how life is.
A lot of Darrens. In response to being
bloody
asked...
Bloody Darrens.
In response to being asked what it felt like being on one of the only few non-black actors on set, and sometimes the only non-black actor on set, Martin Freeman said, "You think, right, this is what black actors feel like all the time."
Yeah.
Freeman, I love this. Freeman and Andy Serkis were known as, wait for it, the Tolkien white guys on set, since they also starred together in the Hobbit films.
Boo.
Oh, that's... Shut up. That is brilliant.
Is it?
That's so playful and lovely. Anyway.
That's like a WhatsApp name that's been dropped to the public. That's what that was.
No, do you know what that is? That's a pub quiz team name. According to Variety magazine, the Black Panther movie is seen as a social turning point because it became the first billion-dollar blockbuster with a majority black cast, following a script by a black writer and following a black director. Black Panther is the first movie in the Marvel Cinematic Universe to have its opening weekend domestic box office surpassed its production cost. It cost $200 million to make, and its Thursday night, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday opening weekend domestic box office was $202 million. Wow.
That's it's a really impressive feat, isn't it?
That is absolutely good. The movie has a whopping 96% on Rotten Tomatoes based on 500 different movie reviews. Just to put that in perspective, if I remember this right, Iron Man, the first Iron Man film, which is regarded as possibly the best MCU film, 94%, if I remember right.
Yeah.
So this is a big deal here.
Iron Man's regarded as the best MCU movie?
A lot of people do. A lot of people love Iron Man. Yeah.
I know a lot of people love it, but I didn't know it was regarded as the best.
Well, I've had a lot of conversations. Five people, Rob. Five people I talked to.
I'll tell you what I am noticing.
What are you noticing?
The scores of all the on Rotten Tomato, the not the fresh rating, but the audience score on all Marvel movies is going down. They've all gone down within the last 18 months to 2 years.
You think so?
No. They definitely have.
Oh.
It seems to be an influx of people signing up to write bad reviews of older Marvel movies. movies that, when they came out, where everyone went, this is an incredible movie, the score's really, really high. And now those are dropping down. There is this weird active kind of propaganda campaign to have this weird agenda against Marvel. But, you know, whatever.
Sounds like Snyder bots to me.
It sounds kind of similar in that vein, doesn't it?
Yeah. He ruined the... Oh, awful man. Anyway, composer Ludwig Göransson travelled to South Africa to... It's great. I get the name wrong for a white guy this time.
How do you know he's a white guy just because his name's Ludwig?
Oh, come on. That's definitely a Scandinavian name. Come on, there's an umlaut in there. Have you met a black guy with an umlaut in their name? No. Travelled to South Africa and visited the International Library of African Music in Grahamstown to listen to the musical archives, thousands of different tribes in Africa. He also travelled to Senegal and South Africa to record local musicians to form the bass of the music. So yeah, there was a lot of work done here. Finally, and this is the part I really love, the film Black Panther went on to win various awards, including 7 Academy Award nominations, winning 3 for Best Costume Design, Best Original Score, and Best Production Design. It was also the first superhero film to receive a Best Picture nomination, and the first MCU film to win several categories. Just to put that in perspective, the first comic book superhero film in 40 years since the original Superman in 1978 to be nominated for the Academy Award for Best Music, Original Score. In fact, Superman and Black Panther are the only two comic book superhero films to be nominated in this category, with the latter being the first to receive the award.
Thanks for joining us as we revisit some of our favourite moments from Marvel vs. Marvel. Don't forget, our full-length episodes are jam-packed with hours of Marvel trivia, behind the page, behind the scenes, and comic book Marvel history.